Okay, this is the hour. We're going to take your phone calls next. Grant Cameron standing by. We all are. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Grant Cameron, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Grant, how many researchers like you are out there doing what you're doing?
Presidential work?
Yeah.
Just Stanton Friedman and myself. Stanton
that's
did
it.
Some work. I think that's it.
My gosh, not a lot, but I'm glad you two were out there.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's people doing FYA material, but just two of us, I think.
Is Larry still out there doing
it? Oh, yeah. Larry
Bryant.
Bryant, yeah. He's he did some Carter stuff. He's off on, going after George Bush. Spends most of his time doing that now.
Okay.
And the war.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, you're on with us. Hello there.
George, fascinating show tonight.
It is. He's a great guest. Go ahead.
Yes, this is John in Atlanta. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning.
I wonder what you might could say about the former governor of Arizona finally coming out publicly and admitting witnessing this crap. And also my second question is about the story of, I think, one of Coast's most fascinating guests, David Adair, and his story and his claim. Mm-hmm. Have you ever investigated that? And get off and listen.
Okay.
The governor of Arizona, it's very strange that he would come out years later and suddenly reverse his story. That, I guess, is the dilemma, is that these guys, it's a status deal. It's if you look at it and say, do I want to be associated with a subject that might, do me in? It puts a question on his story, though. So the whole thing, once you change your story, then it becomes very questionable. But there's more and more on this Phoenix Light thing, more and more people and more evidence, and it's becoming an amazing story. The David Adair thing, I've watched this story numerous times. My interest in the story, it's hard to confirm a lot of it, was to follow people like, I think he was with LeMay, General LeMay, and LeMay
and
was
involved. And apparently he saw things at Area 51.
Yeah, but it was LeMay that had given him the clearance.
Curtis LeMay.
Had been fascinated with him as a kid or whatever, and LeMay was interested. He was involved in the Roswell thing. That was the only thing I was really following. I was trying to track, but again, I haven't seen LeMay's files. That's basically what you have to do is you got to go and track the files and see whether the dates agree and whether there's correspondence between these people. Those kind of stories are very, very hard to track and confirm. But it is a fascinating story. I've heard it numerous times.
Apparently, when he was 11 years old, he was at Area 51.
Yeah.
And then he got a little older. He witnessed some kind of gigantic engine that had like an exoskeleton-shaped number 8 on it.
Yeah.
It's just weird stuff.
And the thing was alive. It was alive, which is a theory that other people have, or something that other people have proposed, that these things are actually, the craft is part of the person, the unit. It's not. It's more of a living thing than an actual metal craft type thing.
What do you think of the Japanese government official saying that these might be real? We'll investigate.
Yeah, here again, this is another one of these things where you sort of wonder how much the governments actually know. If you get the Japanese, who are pretty technically advanced, I mean, the government coming out and saying, making sort of, almost like statements that you'd make in the 1940s. Oh, yeah, this is interesting, as if they're just starting out. You would figure that they should have all sorts of material, and if these guys are the government, they would not be saying, bring us your UFO files, and we're very interested in this and the ramifications of aliens visiting and stuff. It's very strange that they seem not to know what's going on either, that they're very interested in it, but just basically are like you and I trying to figure out this UFO thing.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing?
Yeah, we're great. Thanks.
It's great that I actually got on the show. You guys are a pretty good show, and it's really hard to get on to. But you guys are fantastic.
You made it tonight. Go ahead.
I know. I've tried a couple of times. I've started listening to you guys for a couple of weeks, and now I'm hooked. But, well, anyway, besides the point, I have a question and maybe a little theory. But UFO mechanics. And when I was younger, I had an experience, a kind of personal experience that I didn't understand what it meant until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I recalled that experience that I had, and I kind of had an epiphany. And since then, I decided to go to college for physics. Now I'm in school studying physics. But I kind of have an interesting theory on maybe how possible UFOs might fly, if it's an interesting thing that might work. Well, it doesn't hurt to think sometimes.
Nope, not at all.
Sorry, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, what was the experience? Was it a...
Well, actually, when I was 2 years old, my brother and I, we actually lit the house on fire, and I actually died twice. I had no pulse, no respiration.
Jeez.
And the part I remembered a couple of years ago is that I had a memory that I couldn't possibly have had because I was dead. We were in a closet. We locked ourselves in a closet, and we set the house on fire. We were scared, so we stayed in the closet. But the first memory I had was when my mom was trying to get into the room. She's telling my sister to get a cold rag, the doorknob and stuff. But if I was in the closet, unconscious and dead, how can I have memories? You know, I just had some weird memories that I shouldn't have been having.
Okay, this is what I was saying about ufology, that the more you look at ufology, the more complex this thing becomes. I remember sitting, this was at the MUFON conference in Denver, in one of these meetings with abductee people. And this guy, I can't remember, his name escapes me, but a very famous abductee from the Denver area, had taken all these videos and stuff, and had numerous very traumatic experiences. He was sitting right beside me, he was talking, and he was almost in tears at times, very traumatic. And this is a guy that's got these mathematical equations. Guy has really no education, whatever, to back up this kind of stuff. Has these mathematical equations that they've shown to people like, I think, Hal Puthoff and people like this. And these equations actually do mean stuff. So where is this stuff coming from? And that's the whole deal, that there are people running around who are sort of being dropped little things into their mind. And that's why I'm thinking, we asked what kind of experience, because if it is an abduction type experience, that this is, I think, is, I'm not an expert, but I've heard lots of these types of stories where people have these ideas and this stuff, they don't know where it comes from, and they suddenly have stuff that they can do that they never could do before.
Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Thank you very much. You guys are having a fascinating show.
Thank you.
Before, I was more of an unsophisticated observer of the UFO phenomena. I saw something that knocked my socks off with a witness on Donner Pass about 10 years ago at about 3 or 4 in the morning that was nothing like anything that I would imagine in my imagination at the time a UFO to look like. It was basically, for the listeners to know, it's only about 100 feet away. 100 feet overhead, it flew right over us, and it looked very, very much like a submarine, but floating. And it was coming from the direction of Lake Tahoe. And the thing I noticed that I would have never imagined was I thought it was wet. And this was like before I even heard about underwater USOs, I guess they call them. And we had the peace of mind to try to look inside these recessed windows. Now, these recessed windows were about 6 to 8 feet recessed, and there was a lot of them. And these were very strong-looking glass windows. Some of them were lit, some of them weren't. Tried my hardest to look in those windows to see if I could see anything, but the thing went right over us. It didn't hardly make a sound. I don't know what was generating the energy for this thing, but it was about as long as a football field. It just put us into the state of shock. We drove down to Truckee, which is a town near Tahoe, coming over the pass, and we were just, like, speechless. We were talking in, like, shock. I mean, it was like, what? And because of the way the conversation went, I knew we exactly both saw the same thing. We didn't tip each other off with conversation or anything. It was just like, oh, my God, we were shaking for, like, and you know what? There's U.S. radars right up there on that mountain, right there where we saw it. They're right there. And this thing was flying about 10 feet really close to the treetops of the pine trees that are there that are probably about 100, 150 feet tall. And it was like nothing like I would imagine. So I've been listening for the last 10 years. But I was just wondering, is there a place to call to see if there was any more sightings that came in that night?
If you go on the our website or just do a search for the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport might be able to track that for you.
Because I bet you there's people out there, you know, besides this call.
Absolutely.
That are probably wondering that. And also the thing on the political people, because of the UFO influence from 10 years ago, I kind of am in the process of doing a book on the political world from kind of like a coast-to-coast point of view where you don't just, you know, report that, you know, Clinton said this and Obama said that. You kind of report, well, isn't it funny that she did this on a full moon and they're coming off of this and they're doing this and we're reporting things that are discovered. Like,
you may be my next guest.
Like when's the Venus getting hit by lightning and the Mars thing with the asteroid. When's that going to happen? And, you know, we're doing a very accurate political book, though, at the same time. Very, very astute, but not uptight.
Okay, great. I'd love to read it when it's done, and you too may end up being a guest. Grant, where do you go from here? I mean, you continue to get these documents, hoping that you get these documents. I mean, what's going to happen?
I think we're getting closer. I mean, this election is completely different than all the rest. I mean, it is the major issue. For example, one of the things, as I've said before, the conservative people are very upset about these UFO documents coming out. It was a major story. Like I'm telling you, the Washington Post was talking at great length with me. They had the documents, the Hillary documents that I had that showed her involvement and stuff like that. There are more documents coming. I have 30,000 pages of UFO documents under review at the Clinton Library. And just UFO, straight UFO stuff is like 2,500 pages. This is a huge release of files. I'm still in front. The reason that I'm ahead of them is I filed first, that I had 1,000 pages of Clinton documents from the Office of Science, the President's Science Advisor from when he was in office. These were not subject to FOIA. I was able to get 1,000 pages. So I had all the names of all the people who were involved in the Clinton administration in this kind of stuff. And I was starting to file this free information. I had all the questions. I started doing this like 10 years ago. So I filed very early. I've got lots more files coming. I think you may be in a situation where, as I told one conservative newspaper that had written up about what a total waste of time this was to file this UFO stuff, let's get to the real stuff, the Hillary Clinton diaries and stuff like this. I said, I'm not going to, why should I stand aside and let you determine your self-interest when you didn't get off the couch to go and file? Get ready for a long wait. Because I've got 100 Freedom Information Act requests, and I'm still first in line. you may be seeing a lot more articles coming out. If for example, if they release the 1,500 or 2,000 pages of UFO documents, people are going to, every time it comes out, all the reporters take a look and say, what's with all this UFO stuff coming out of the Clinton Library?
Exactly.
And I've got a lot. And
there you
are. You're going to see some more stories, I think.
What's your home or office look like with all these documents all over the place?
Well, right now I just have, from this latest release, I've got some photographs and I've got a few documents. I've got, my kid just shakes his head when he looks at my room. I said, well, this is very organized. I've got a couple of computers and books and documents and stuff. But a lot of it now is done on computer and it's all sort of digitalized and to enable to move this material, which is one of the things that just fascinates me. When we first started this thing, it was sort of like you were mailing stuff. Now it's like if something breaks, if I get when I got the photographs of Hillary Clinton with Lawrence Rockefeller at the ranch, and this is where Lawrence Rockefeller sat down with President Clinton and Hillary and briefed them, or not briefed them, but he talked to them about UFOs, and this was in August of 1995 when the Clintons went there for holidays.
Well,
I got the photographs of Hillary to confirm the story that Hillary was there, and here she is with Lawrence Rockefeller walking along a path, and she's got this book that everybody's trying to figure out what book was she holding now. But anyway, this kind of stuff, I can get these photographs, and within minutes, they're all around the world. And so the technology is moving very fast. We've got people all over the world working on this stuff. And I think we have, as I said, government has to be pressured. And I think we now have some people who, Stephen Bassett's doing a fantastic job
in terms of
pushing this issue and trying to force it. And I think it's just a matter of time. I thought the Washington Post had the documents. I thought they were going to go with the documents. And they ran the story on me about the Clinton stuff without the documents. But you may get another couple of releases from the Clintons on UFOs. And once somebody runs these documents, there's three key documents that show that Hillary had a role in the Clinton White House, that she edited a UFO disclosure document for the president on behalf of Lawrence Rockefeller, and all the material that was Lawrence Rockefeller was trying to get the Clintons to declassify, all the material that the president's science advisor and all the material Lawrence Rockefeller were gathering was going through Hillary Clinton's office. So this is a major type of thing that I think if you go to the Washington Post, Associated Press has the documents, Fox News has the documents, any of these people run those documents, and it could be a real long run of stories.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with us. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. My name is Merlin. I'm phoning from Chicago.
Hello, Merlin.
And excited to be on the show.
Thanks.
I'm wondering, has there been any kind of research from going back to our founding fathers, say like George Washington, you have Ben Franklin, signers of the Constitution, and Ben Franklin, of course, was a scientist, and I believe prior to the, I think it was before the Revolutionary War, he made trips to England, going back and forth, and so on. So I'm wondering, and also they must have dealt with Indians, you know, around the various communities where these folks lived. So I'm wondering if there's any kind of research letters, research being done, maybe to research letters written, books, manuscripts, anything at all, that where the UFO subject is brought up. You know,
what do you think? What do you think of that, Grant? We've got a minute before the break. Go ahead.
Okay, I tracked two stories. One was George Washington, and the story he had a vision, and I think it was interpreted as an angel or something.
That was an angelic vision, I think.
Yeah, well, but you get a lot of these things where you sort of like the Ezekiel's vision in the Bible, where then suddenly it gets interpreted as a UFO. So that was the one I looked at, wasn't able to confirm anything. The other was Lincoln. Lincoln was very sort of into this kind of stuff, and there was a story which I was never able to confirm that Lincoln had met with aliens, but I think it was Strange's put this story out, and I was never able to. I went through a lot of Lincoln material and was never able to confirm that story.
Wouldn't that be incredible if Abraham Lincoln met with aliens? Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, it all seemed to start in with Roosevelt. Roosevelt, there was a lot of stories. It just seemed to start right there and just increased, and especially when the atomic bomb went off, then everything started and the stories really took off.
Grant, when we come back, we'll finish with final calls. But I want to ask you when we come back, if you believe that we have been visited. I know you're researching this. I know you're getting documents. But what do you believe? I'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls. This is George Norrie, and you're listening to Coast AM. Mr. Cameron, so what do you believe? Have we been visited?
Yes, we have. As I said, the way I started was basically having an experience. And you have people who believe, people who disbelieve, and then the people who have had experiences know. My father's a pilot. My son's a pilot. I have never seen anything like this. I had a whole pile of sightings that's 50 feet away at one point. At one point, I had this thing sitting right on top of the car, maybe about 100 feet up, huge object. And my experience has led me to two beliefs. Skeptics are almost always wrong, people who naysay this thing. And if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, has sex with other ducks, it's probably a duck. I've had experiences where people talk about out-of-body experiences. I've tried that. I have my doubts about anything that I haven't experienced. And I've tried lots of the esoteric, trying to duplicate these things, have not been able to. UFOs, I had a lot of experiences. I had no doubt from the very start that this was extraterrestrial. If it wasn't, it was something very, very spectacular that is not of this world. I've never seen anything like it since. I had lots of sightings. and I've never had any doubts. To me, it's always been a game of finding out what is the real answer, that this is extraterrestrial, but who has the answer? And I've spent all my time. I couldn't care less about sightings anymore. I mean, people have said, well, you see stuff. I really don't care. I've seen, I know what I saw. And to me, it's just a matter of getting the answer now.
And indeed you will. And we'll be right with you when you get them. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
That would be me. That would be me.
Yes, I think you would be a very good selection.
I'm outside of Fallon, Nevada, real close to Fallon NAS, Naval Air Station. And each evening, I see very, very many lights, and I've got a lava dome over here. I'm in the middle of the old Lahontan Lake, which was 10,000 years ago drained. I've got all kinds of stuff around here, but lights and UFOs over close to where I'm at, where I live. I live on a ranch. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and I have no internet access, et cetera. Want to sell my lava dome over here? I have visitations probably two or three times a week. Things drop in there. And I am kind of wondering if it would be a governmental type thing or it would be extraterrestrial. And as a footnote, I used to shoot competition with some gentlemen that used to work at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I was born in Ohio, and I migrated out here. A friend of mine, an older gentleman that was a general, I asked him about Hangar 13 and a few things about the UFO things. And at the time, I was probably 17 or 18 years old. And at that point in time, he did not answer me. The next time we went to a competition, he walked by me, looked at me over his shoulder, and said, "You're absolutely right, Mark." And nothing else was said.
With a true conviction, too, I bet.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. My friend, I'll tell you what. This guy, there was no way that he would lie to me, would have lied to me at all.
What a great story. You know, Grant, no way to determine truly if it's a extraterrestrial craft or a government craft, is there?
No, that's one of the other things. One big question is, does the president know or does the president not know? The other one is, have we got the technology? There's some indications that we don't, and then there's Ben Rich standing up and saying we now have the technology to take ET home, and it would take an act of God to get it out because it's so far in the black. Stephen Greer is big on stating that we now have the technology, that we've had it for quite a few years. I haven't really studied that. I haven't seen it from the presidential angle, but that is one of the stories, is that that's the big secret, is the technology behind it, that they really don't care about the alien part. They just, it's a matter of we get it, or the Iraqis get it, or the Russians get it, or the Chinese get it, and you protect what you've got, and these deep black programs have made progress. So there's a lot of people out there who believe that the government does have the technology and they've back engineered this stuff and they're flying it around. It's hard to, unless we find a document or something, it's hard to prove it one way or the other. But Stephen Greer, I've had respect for. He's got, you know, a lot of people and a lot of stuff, and then Ben Rich coming out with this statement stating that you know, they have the technology to take ET home. Mm-hmm. It's possible that the government has the technology.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Yeah, hi. I've met with remote viewers that are closely associated with the Avery in the past, and they've come to the conclusion that aliens are shapeshifters and time benders, and that they're replacing the president. So the reason why why all the secrecy is because aliens are hostile and they're using deception, so you won't be able to get much out of asking the president questions. And finally, SRI reverse engineered zero point energy back in 1971 from a textbook that they were able to have an out of body experience, fly to another planet, and bring back a smoking gun textbook, which is what caused Jacques Vallée and other members of the Avery the Owl help put off to get into ufologies, because they had the evidence all along, which SRI has reverse engineered. And why it's not in the public domain and hasn't caused global transformation yet was because of 9/11, which Washington was very well aware of and was briefed on, and zero point energy would have prevented their contrived war for oil. So I was wondering what you make of the shapeshifter time bender
theory. Okay.
Theory.
Go ahead, Grant.
I know a number of the Avery. I've never heard them talk about this kind of stuff. They're very conservative type people, the people who are, you know, part of this group. These kind of theories run around. It's hard to confirm this kind of stuff. My experience with them is they're very, very conservative, very cautious about what they say. I've never heard this kind of stuff.
Never, ever.
Nope.
Wild card line, you're up with us. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, good.
Gotcha.
George.
Go ahead.
George.
You've been on so long. You've been on hold so long. We got you.
I was falling asleep here. George, you're a great patriot, and I love your program. I'm Phil from Michigan on Streamlink.
Hey, Phil.
And I want to remind you fellas about what happened in Michigan in 1966 in the spring.
With J. Allen Hynek.
And every night we would wait for Jack LaGoff to come on the news to give the UFO report.
Yep.
And one night we were waiting and we saw out of our back windows like a little red light bouncing all over the sky, as this vehicle was coming into our dimension, totally out of control, broke down, came down right behind our house, and they were broke down for a half an hour. My dad, as an engineer, and I, as a little kid, we went back there to try to help these guys. We thought they were Air Force. But then looking at this thing, not making any noise, and having all the cars following it, there was a caravan of cars, hundreds of witnesses, we realized that this is not U.S. Air Force. And didn't make a sound, and I want to just remind everybody of all the great things that happened back then with the UFO topic, and reviewing it years later, and I talked to Jacques Vallée, and I was the one that told him on WWJ on a radio program way back in the 70s about interdimensional. They were totally out of control. If a human being was in that craft, he would have been squashed by the G-force, because we're talking from almost horizon to horizon, 10 miles, 5 miles on every movement. The best thing I could describe it was a mosquito chaser waving in the darkness of night. And they were broke down, and I just don't think they can ever disclose any of this thing, and they can't disclose it, because it would go contrary to everything that the government is involved in as far as secrecy and even with our religious beliefs. It's too ugly.
That's possible. And, you know, Phil, back in the early 70s on that radio station, I was the producer of that program.
Yeah.
That small world.
I saw you. And I even knew your friend, Joe Pellegrino.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I had dinner with him a couple of times, and that was one of the topics. And
it's a small world.
But, George, I love your program. I'm thankful that I hooked up on your Streamlink, by the way, because during the day I can catch up.
Yep, we podcast you.
Oh man, it's beautiful. And Grant, I appreciate the work you're doing, and keep up the work. I mean, the information's there. keep pushing, but I just think that the guys in power and all the presidents probably knew about this. Certainly Eisenhower did. Absolutely Eisenhower did.
Yeah.
And Nixon, obviously, he was a control freak. He was suspicious of everything. Who's going to say no to Richard Nixon? Who's going to say no to Reagan? And who's going to say no to an insider like George W. Bush Sr.? Okay, yeah. These guys know. They do know about what happened. Reagan mentioned it many, many, many times in his speeches, and I remember this very, very vividly. It was like, to me, it's like a no-brainer. I was a witness. I saw it up close. It was real. It was actual hardware. There's no question in my mind. The press didn't even cover it, and they had witnesses everywhere. By the way, after it left the field behind us, it went right over to the tank arsenal on Van Dyke and Martin Road, and it turned on big lights, and it was photographing or was doing something above that. We all saw that. The policemen seen it.
Jeez.
Everybody saw it. Van Dyke Road, you got hundreds of cars going down Van Dyke every 10 minutes. Everybody saw this. I got a lot of heck from opening my mouth when I went back to school, but when our football coach said he saw it, and when our basketball coach said he saw it, then everybody knew this was just something we can accept. This is the real thing. And I just hope someday, George, you have a close encounter.
I want one. I want a real close one.
I'm telling you, you will be amazed, and it will. I mean, it's the universe is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's God's creation. There's more than just us on this world. And if you really look at it's in the Bible. It's you talk about Ezekiel 1. You've got they even mentioned that highly polished bronze vehicles. If you take the original text, UFOs go back. To so far back, who knows? Anyway, I said enough.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Let's get a little reaction from you, Grant. He's right on, Grant.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be interesting to know if he reported this. It sounds like one of these stories that would almost make a book. Fascinating. My big question to him is he refers to they, which is one of the big things I work on all the time. Who are they?
Who are they?
Who is covering this thing up? And I don't think it's quite that certain yet.
And who do you think the men in black might be?
Interesting. I had a guy in Winnipeg who told me the story about Men in Black. John Schussler told me his story of Men in Black. Very, very. That's what I'm saying. When you get into ufology, you get into the more and more you get, the weirder it gets, the more complex it gets. I have no idea. But no doubt these people have seen what they say they've seen, and it's gone on almost as long as ufology. It's just another layer to, like an onion, another layer of this complexity of this mystery, which may be part of what the government doesn't really want to release, is they really don't know what Men in Black are. Or I always said, like, if you're the president of the United States, you say you're George Bush and you're going to disclose, you're going to stand up and say, okay, UFOs are extraterrestrial, that's all we're going to say, it's classified. Within a day, there's going to be 2,000 trucks on the White House lawn with antennas and stuff, and somebody's going to ask the president, Mr. President, you're constitutionally responsible for the protection of the American people. It's been estimated that 2 million people have been abducted. What are you doing, Mr. Bush, to protect the American people? Yeah, I don't think he has an answer. I don't think he has any concept. The government has any control. If aliens are abducting people, they have no control over this whatsoever. And those kind of questions are what you really don't want to be facing, is to answer all the stuff that you don't know, because it makes you look stupid.
Well, and as David Jacobs believes, this is happening, and it's not for a good purpose.
Yeah, exactly. You get that kind of stuff, and unless you're in a situation where you can answer the question, it's better off not to bring up the subject and look like you know everything that's going on. Because the president is in a position where he always has to look like he has the answer to everything.
All right, let's go. The president doesn't. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. You're speaking to me. Oh, wonderful. I actually, my experiences last about 30 days. They date back to the time of the, you remember that lunar eclipse that we had?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And then you couldn't see the moon.
This was the one in October, wasn't it?
I think it was around September 1st.
September. Okay.
Okay, and then what happened was, on the morning of the lunar eclipse, I saw what I thought was a meteor on the opposite side to the lunar eclipse. And I know we're running out of time here, so I'm going to have to make it short.
Yeah, I've got just about a minute or so for you. Go ahead.
Okay. On September 4th, I retrieved two bona fide study signals at the University of Western Ontario, proof positive that extraterrestrial intelligence exists.
What were the signals like?
Well, I'm not so sure I want to share that with you because I believe they contain valuable genetics information.
Well, don't give me the specifics, but I mean, how did the signal come in and what form?
Oh, I first discovered the signals telepathically. I was asked, what happened was I...
All right, but it didn't come through your computer then?
It did. It was on the computer. I confirmed it online. The actual
Okay, so you do have... Did you pass this on to SETI?
Not yet, but there's more. Like, I saw an actual spacecraft about 100 yards above me, an actual nuts-and-bolt metallic spacecraft with four lights. It was a four-winged spacecraft. Three of the wings had a crimson-red light. The one that... the front
did you,
one...
Did you see an occupant?
No, but it was silent. It was about 100 yards above me, and a scout ship exited the craft, and it was doing surveillance around the area. And there were footsteps in the woods, and I was afraid that there might have been a serial killer, so I was lying down on my back, and I didn't want to.
All right. I don't blame you. Hey, we got the clock. Grant, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Grant Cameron. For Dan Galante, who's put in some extra yeoman work for us today. Steve Carr, Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.